to MUFON Canada's UFO Primer. I'm Dave Palachuk, National Director of MUFON Canada and Executive Producer of MUFON Canada's podcast. MUFON is the world's largest and oldest civilian UFO investigative and research organization with members in many countries around the world. Our number one goal is to be the inquisitive mind's refuge seeking answers to the most ancient question, are we alone in the universe? Simple answer is no. Do you have UFO reports to share, armchair UFO investigator aspirations, or want to train and join our investigative team? MUFON is here for you. Will you please join us in our quest to discover the truth? What do we know after 50 years of MUFON? 1. UFOs are real. UFOs represent advanced technology not from any country on planet Earth. 2. We are not alone in the universe. We never have been. 3. According to the data we collect, our universe is teeming with life. And 4, the UFO phenomenon is worthy of scientific study because tremendous breakthroughs will result if we allow our scientists and engineers to do so without fear of ridicule. Each episode will feature a guest host along with our very special guests who are willing to disclose their knowledge on ufology. Hope you enjoy the information you hear in this podcast and use it to help decide if you believe. Embrace the future with MUFON Canada. Hello everyone, my name is Dave Palachuk. I am the National Director of MUFON Canada, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest host, who is going to introduce our very special guest for this episode, and it is a case right out of the history books from Canada. Our guest host is Linda Refuse from Liverpool, Nova Scotia, and Linda's relived in Nova Scotia most of her life. She's a manager of two museum sites for the last 30 years. Wow, two. Her interests are history, geology, and ufology. And that's, she says, are her three loves. The ufology is brought on, I guess, from the experience that she had in 1967. Got her started on her way to becoming a field investigator for MUFON Canada. So our Nova Scotian investigator, Linda Refuse. Linda?
Thank you, Dave. So today, our guest is retired RCMP Constable James Blackwood of Churchville, Nova Scotia. James, welcome, and thank you for joining us today to share this very interesting story with our listeners. So today, James is enjoying his retirement days, staying busy and enjoys the pastime of daily nighttime feedings of a very large group of friendly raccoons. And James, I have enjoyed watching some of your videos. But let's jump back to another nighttime in 1978 when the then RCMP Constable Blackwood was stationed in Clarenville, Newfoundland. At about 1:45 a.m., James's station received an unusual call. And so I would like to ask that you take it from there, as this story all begins with that phone call.
Yes, thank you for having me on. My shift ended at 2 o'clock that morning, and when I was in the office, I took the phone call around 10 to 2, and it was a local person who I knew down on the waterfront. He said that there was a object in the sky getting closer and closer to Clarenville, and that I should check it out. Now, prior to this, we've had other calls regarding unidentified flying objects, and we investigated them, but we've never ever seen anything. So I didn't think we were going to see anything again. Usually when we get there, it's gone. So when I went there, I could see it, but it wasn't all that visible because it was still approaching. And I said, well, that's weird. I said, at first I thought it was a planet. And then it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden it was right down on the water, right in front of us. And I'd say with the size of it, about the size of a 737 aircraft, and maybe a little bit bigger. and it was on the water between Clarenville and Random Island, what we call the Clarenville Harbor. And the person that called me, he's since passed away, but it was him and some of his family members. I said, well, 12 of us all together were watching this thing, and he had a pair of binoculars. And so anyway, we were watching the binoculars, and once it got so close, we didn't need them anymore. And I scooted up to the office, and I got, we had a telescope there on loan for drug surveillance called a ball scope. And you can multiply images up to 60 times the normal rate. So I had that all set up in the tripod and everything. And when I zoomed in on the craft itself, you could see the metal was like it wasn't shiny. It was more like a gray, dull type surface. And it looked like it was pitted, you know. And it had the bottom part, the whole bottom was all illuminated. And it was reflecting off the water. And it just sat there, and then all of a sudden started moving back and forth, rotating back and forth, coming toward shore. So I activated the roof lights on my police car. When I did that, it activated lights on the craft. And my friend there that made the call, he asked, he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I thought maybe we could make some kind of a contact. And he said, I'm not contacting anything. I'm getting out of here, he said. But I was very drawn to it. It's a good job it was on the water, because had it been on land, I'd have walked right up underneath it. I had no fear of it at all. But it was just something I just couldn't take my eyes off. And it stayed there for about an hour and 45 minutes. And then when it left, it came as it approached, started moving off slowly, and then poof, gone like a shooting star, only going the other way. So I went back to the office, but I had already contacted my staff sergeant when I got the ball scope, told him, you know, what was down there. And I know if he looked out his bedroom window, he could have saw. But he didn't want to get involved in it. You know, I only got a few more years for retirement. So anyway, that's the way it was. And then the next day, my phone started ringing off the wall at home. People wanting interviews. Of course, I denied them. I said, no comment. Wouldn't talk to anybody. And I think it was the next day, my staff sergeant called me in the office, and he said, the commanding officer of the division wants you to go and do an interview with Jeff Sterling up the NTV TV network. And so that's that interview that you see on YouTube today. I was only 25 at the time. And then I think CBC did one there later on, but it wasn't as in-depth as what Mr. Sterling's was. He covered it, all the bases of it. But it was a fascinating thing to see. I've never seen one since. And like you said, I did take a lot of ridicule from my fellow members. Our ident section sent a picture of a flying saucer, and it had an alien sticking his head out the window and hollering my name with like a little bubble around there, and saying we want Blackwood, and they were calling me Mork for Mork on the radio, and it was just, you know. And I was in the force a long time after that, but every time I met somebody new, they'd say, oh, you're that UFO fella. But NTV still play that video today, and it's all in years later. They still play it late at night and early Saturday mornings, like, say, around 8 o'clock in the morning. I still see it on TV.
But, Jim, when you went back, when you originally went back to the station, were you not given a special paper to sign?
Yes, we had to. We had a C-237 form, and it had a green border down the side, and it had top secret on it. And I had to do up a report on the Fast Stars and stayed up with me all night till I got it all done. And then we had to seal it in a special envelope. They had a special secret tape on it, all the rigmarole. He had to lock it in the safe, and then it had to be, what did he call it back then? It was double registry, they called it. And that went to Ottawa, and then they shared it with the National Research Council. This Dr. McNamara was the fellow that came and did a little spiel on what he thought I saw.
Out of curiosity, out of curiosity, was that form an RCMP form, or do you think it came from another division of our government?
No, it was an RCMP form. It had the Royal Canadian Mounted Police emblem on the top of it. But we have different forms we use for investigative things, but this is the first time I ever saw anything like this. And he stayed with me while I did it in triplicate. We had the old carbon copies, old carbon paper back
then. Oh, yes.
And, you know, even our CPIC wasn't, it was typewriter type stuff. We even still had a telex machine. That's how far back we go, you know. But that was sent off, and I never saw that again. But I did see some people have been able to find copies of that report. And there was a member, Cal Davis, he did the investigation of me. And he came back, you know, that was, nobody else saw the craft any further, and they concluded the file. But McNamara, his report, he stated that what I probably saw was the planet Jupiter, because at that time of year, it rises over the meridian, and this is the way he described it. And I was totally miffed. And I forget what the name of the company was that interviewed me at the time, and I didn't care what the CEO said. I tore a strip off him. And I said, he didn't even interview me or the other people that were there, but he came to that conclusion that it was the planet Jupiter. And I said, how in the name of God, Jupiter come down and sit on top of the water? Doesn't he realize how big that planet is? You know?
But yet at the same time, you're asked to fill out a report that's labeled top secret and flown or sent to Ottawa, so there's a little bit of contradiction there, yeah, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know how National Research Council got a hold of it, but I mean, it was sent directly to the commissioner in Ottawa.
Right. But what about, now, like you were saying in the beginning there, that you weren't the only witness. There was a group of you, like at least a dozen other people.
Yeah. And you know what the town did? They had the Holiday Inn had a UFO weekend, and if you won this holiday weekend on the radio station, they gave you binoculars and a star chart and free room and meals for a weekend.
Wow.
And there was people coming from the States and everything to hoping that they would see this craft again, and they renamed the hockey team. The gentleman's hockey team was called the Flammable UFOs, which I played. I was goaltender for, and we had red jerseys with a yellow flying saucer on the front of them. I did Flammable UFOs, and the local car dealer had a UFO sale for cars, and they had little flying saucers in the windows, and so the people were making money off it, you know.
Get
on the map.
And was this the first sighting? Were there not, did I read that the residents were saying that there had been a couple of other phone calls previous to this sighting?
Yeah, there was in an area called Lethbridge-Bloomfield area, and that was about maybe a 15-minute drive out of Claremont.
Okay.
And that's the area surrounded by water as well. But when we went down there for that one, the craft was gone. We didn't see anything.
Okay.
But we took the report from the local people that were there to witness it.
Jim, do you think there are of those, like the original, the other witnesses there who placed that call that night to bring you down to the wharf, do you think that any of those people would still be around today in Clarenville? Or?
Well, I know Jess Lethbridge since died, but his brother, there's a couple of his brothers still alive. And I know Jess's wife and his family were down there, and their sons, and it was like 2 in the morning when they, of course, they were all Nader people anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to see this thing coming down. And,
mm-hmm.
Beautiful clear night. You know, it was, the stars everywhere. Mm-hmm. Couldn't ask for a better night to watch something like this.
Yeah. So there are still people there probably
yeah.
in Clarenville who can talk about it as well as they witnessed back then. Yeah. But you did, you have a drawing of it. Unfortunately, no cell phones back then.
No.
But you did do a drawing of it, did you?
Yes, I did, yeah, and I held the drawing up in the video.
Okay.
It's just a rough drawing I did there on the desk.
Yeah.
And it had a tail at the back of it, but it was, like, I know what the tail is for on an aircraft, but this thing didn't look like it was any use. It was too small to be aerodynamic or anything.
So, Jim.
The fascinating part was the lights.
Jim, you said this was the size of a 737, so you're talking 100-foot vehicle. How about the full dimensions? How thick or wide or
It was an oval shape, and it was the same size all the way around. So it was you're looking at like 100-foot diameter, and it was a big craft.
So if you take a retrospective idea of a person's height, how many levels do you think were in that craft to our size?
I would say probably, I'd say there could be 2, maybe 3.
Okay, that's about what we get all the time. Now, mind you, we can't judge size based on our size because we don't know what size an alien actually is. It could be 10 or more stories inside, right? So, anyways, well, that is a typical craft, and that's quite a large one. So
there's been nothing more reported since then, Jim, that you know of in Clarenville since 78.
Well, at the time I had my sighting, there was a Jordanian pilot reported an incident around the exact same time that our sighting happened. They saw this thing leave in the atmosphere.
Okay.
And Eastern Provincial Airways pilot also reported them.
Oh, interesting.
But they're not in existence today. They're WestJet took over all that area. But at that time, it was Eastern Provincial Airways. They were the Atlantic carrier at the time.
Okay. So can you describe how it left the scene, Jim?
It just, it left the same way it arrived. It came down very, very slowly. And then, and after it established how, what height it was going to be and just stayed there. And then when it left the same way. It started going slowly and slowly. And then when it started to be hard to see, and then it just took off and just gone. And boy, by the way, the lights were all turned off this time.
Even on the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, that bottom light, that was hugely bright.
And you said that it appeared as though it were looking for something?
Yeah, it kept going back and forth along the water and moving up and down like a scanning for something, and I don't know.
Is that a deep harbor there where
yes.
it's over?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So you're well aware that we've had many cases of underwater UFOs. You ever given any thought that maybe it was searching for another ship that it thought was under the water in that area?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
What it was doing. To this day, I have no idea what its purpose was.
Fair
I'm
enough.
I'm aware of the Sacred Harbor incident here in Nova Scotia.
Right.
Yeah, still ongoing research with that case as well. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So, Jim, have you read about 2 weeks ago the front page of the New York Times and the announcement that, and I'm going to summarize it, UFOs are real? Did you see that article?
No, I heard about it. I heard people on Facebook talking about it, but I never actually saw it.
All right, so basically they admitted the U.S. government has a vehicle not made on Earth in their possession. So they could have just said UFOs are real, but it sort of indicates Paul Hellyer's comment that UFOs are as real as the airplanes over your head.
Yeah.
So they have basically said UFOs are real.
But you know, I'll tell you, when I was ordered to do my interview, I didn't want to do the interview, and the CEO ordered me, and with the stipulation that they got to view the video before it went to air. And Mr. Sterling told me that the video wasn't touched. It went on as is. They let the whole thing go. So I was surprised at that. I thought they might want to edit something out, you know. But they allowed it to go on just the way it was.
Jim, after your interview, and you said that the results of the report that you had submitted came back with the result that it was their opinion that it was the planet Jupiter. Was that?
Wasn't the RCMP's opinion?
Oh, so no, but
National Research Council. Yeah.
But was that made public? I mean, you know, I just find it interesting that you're made to sign a special piece of paper. But then, you know, it comes back with that result. But were the results of that ever published or put into print?
It came out in a paper, and I had a copy of it, and I don't know what I did with it. It was called RES Bureau Investigations, and they published what the results was from National Research Council. The RCMP had no input at all. And so that's when I saw what Dr. McNamara said, I wrote back to them and I gave them my 2 cents worth. And
sounds like they were taking examples from the U.S. I'm surprised they didn't call it a weather balloon.
Well, I mean, to call it Jupiter, I mean,
yeah.
I don't think... Yeah, pretty far-fetched, especially from our research council.
It's a slap in the face to me, and I didn't take kindly to it, you know.
And it is a slap in the face to you as well, Jim. I mean, you know, back in 1978, but especially now today, in 2020, with what Dave has just said about the Pentagon releasing that, you know, the United States military do have... a vehicle that was not made on this planet. So, you know, even more to add insult to insult, that it's taken this many years for that to come to light, finally.
Yeah. Yeah. I was transferred to another detachment 3 years later in a place called Wesleyville, and when I was contacted by the BBC, they wanted to do a documentary on it, and they were gonna use me as in the documentary, and they were gonna have a flying saucer, like CGI type, you know, me stand there looking. He was describing what they wanted to do, and so I told them they'd have to contact the COB division, and of course the helm had changed by that time, and they wrote back to them, said it was a newsworthy item at the time, and they just wanted to leave it lie. And allow them to do the documentary.
So they were going to try and kind of recreate it in a reenactment.
Yeah, they're going to put a story to it, you know.
Yeah, but it didn't happen.
No, they were denied access. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's just such a very interesting story, and it's really so good to see so many of these stories finally coming to light, but coming back and coming back into the present day when more is being released by government.
Yeah. Well, mine made it was so newsworthy because of who I was at the time. And I wasn't some rookie off the street, you know. I was in the force for quite some time, and
quite a credible witness, I would say.
Yeah. And I thought about it after: should I have reported it, or should I just? But then I wasn't doing them any favor down to the people that made the call. I wasn't doing them any favors by doing that. So I reported it as I saw it.
Well, we're glad you did, Jim, because I'll tell you, we get incredible details from police officers, military, pilots, anybody as a first responder. So when I read cases from what I call super well-trained observers, you can actually picture what happened. And getting the dimensions and a little bit more from you, and hopefully we'll get to see the diagram. It just puts more credibility to these type cases.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, listen, Jim, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And I hope it goes further. You know, I hope that, I would love to see that there could be some people even in Clarenville today that would still like to talk about that. And remember, you know, usually when you have an experience such as what you had, it doesn't matter how many years go by, you still see that experience as clear in your head today as when it happened all those years ago. So there, you know, it would be interesting to see just how many people there might still be in Clarenville who saw what you saw that night in 78.
There was another sighting there that happened 2 years ago.
Oh.
And in Clarenville, and the guy took a picture of it. And I don't know why he forgot about the picture, but he did. And it was in February that he got it. And he never saw it on his camera until, like, that summer. And then he said, oh, I remember I taking that picture. I know if I took a picture of a UFO, I'd have it right away.
Yeah.
Anyway, they contacted me, CBC Gander contacted me, and we did an interview with sort of rehashed what I saw, and then they wanted my view on what this fellow probably saw, you know.
Okay, yeah.
But, it sort of died out, and I never heard any more about it after.
What year was that, do you know, Jim? The second one?
2 years ago.
Well, 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it was in the Clarenville newspaper there, the packet, it was called, the Clarenville Packet. And they showed a picture of, they showed the picture of what he had, you know, and he gave the news the picture of what he had, and it looked like a craft, you know.
Have you seen the picture?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Was it anything close to what you saw?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I'm surprised.
Linda, you have a little investigation to do.
I can see that.
You're going to go find that paper.
Yeah. You said it was called the packet.
The Clarenville Packet, yeah.
Clarenville Packet. All right, I'm on it.
And they did a big story on me there as well. They had right around the same time, and they had me back out again, my big picture there, and present day. Yeah.
Kind of maybe like an anniversary edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, absolutely, we need to check that out.
Yeah,
we get that picture, I'd like to put that up, put it up beside Jim's.
The Canadian Mint did a coin of Shag Harbor last fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I couldn't. I ran out by the time I ordered mine.
Yeah.
There's a new one coming out in the fall.
Yeah, I'll be the first to order it.
Okay.
Who is the new one?
Hmm?
Who is the new coin that's coming out?
I can't tell you. You'll have to say.
Okay.
I'm bound by a contract not to say.
All right. So we might have a little hint as to what it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, a UFO.
That's pretty awesome, though, Jim. I think that's great. But we will check that out. We will follow up to try and see if we can get that article from the Clarenville Packet. and with that photograph, and yeah. and you know, certainly let you know what came of that. Yeah. And as Dave says, he can post that as well.
I have the I saved the video of me talking with the Gander radio, so I can send you that if you want. I have it done on YouTube.
Sure. Oh, that's on your channel, Jim.
Yeah, I'll post it. I think I have it on my channel, my interview with Gander.
That's where I want it.
Yeah.
All right. If you don't mind, I'll reference that so people can go see it. Maybe even put a copy on our channel so they can find it.
I'll send that to you directly.
Fantastic. Yeah, MUFON Canada, these podcasts that we're doing, which we call the UFO Primers, we're concentrating on Canadian cases and digging up old cases to basically say, look, this is reality back then, and it's been confirmed now. And all these people who are skeptical or ridiculed other people, guess what? It's true. So that's why we're concentrating all this. We're hoping MUFON Canada is sort of the go-to for ufology in Canada, where to get all this information in one big concentrated database. MUFON International, we have 100,000 cases to pull on. So Canada gets its fair share, 10% of the U.S., because 10% of the population. And a lot of them, 5 to 8%, are unknown, classified as unknown, real UFO sightings. Yeah. So there's a lot of great stuff. Yours, unfortunately, was never a MUFON case, but it's not necessary that it has to be in there. I appreciate your efforts. Thank you for the interview. Linda, I'm sure you have a couple more things to say, but I also want to say thank you for your service to the citizens of Canada as an RCMP officer. I know that's a pretty tough job.
Yeah, it is sometimes.
yeah. And thanks for not walking away and saying, I don't want to get involved. It's, history's not made by people who ignore the facts. So.
And thank you too, Jim, for standing by your story.
Yeah, thank you.
You were given other opinions, and you did stand by your story, which is certainly the true one.
Thank you.
So thanks for being our guest, and we will definitely keep you posted on what we find out with following up on this other story. And we will continue also to enjoy watching your nightly feedings with your raccoons. That's channel. And that's a great thing.
We appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Thing that you do as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Constable Blackwood. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. Linda.
It's been great to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.